In today's podcast, Phil and I are discussing cognition and dementia. The incidence of these two chronic conditions is increasing, and more therapeutic and treatment options are needed. Join us as we learn more about cognition and dementia with Phil today, from a phytotherapy perspective and the top herbs for use within clinic, and for, of course, successful client outcomes. Welcome, Phil.
Thanks, Charlene.
What is cognition and dementia? Take us through our topic for today and the common deficiencies we see in clinic with these presenting conditions. Can we only help with maintenance or can we do more here? The big question straight away, Phil.
Okay, yeah, that is a big one.
Yeah.
Cognition means different things to different people, but basically it's the capability of learning things and remembering things and utilising the knowledge that we thus obtain to make the right decision or sensible decisions and behave in a so-called sensible way, a so-called normal way, which of course is different for different people. But, you know, human beings, we're an organism like animals, and we have this very complex interplay between, you know, neurotransmitters and brain physiology and our anatomy and our hippocampus and our amygdala and all sorts of our brain. And it is our brain that we think makes us in many respects cognitively superior than other animals, even though it's somewhat debatable at times. It involves a whole lot of processes. It's really, really complex. And so it's not just brains, it's not just IQ. It's day-to-day functioning, really, and involves a whole complex, you know, interplay of pathways. So there are many factors, though, that can lead to cognition being compromised. And, of course, as with every bodily function, as you get older, your brain deteriorates somewhat and it just is not quite as robust or as cognitively sharp as when you were 20, and it's to be expected. But as you say, Charlene, with ageing populations and, you know, brain health becoming more and more important, improved medical care, so people are living longer and we have higher expectations, a lot of us, we're seeing more and more dementia and Alzheimer's, and really, really serious, actually, in terms of the numbers, in terms of pharmacoeconomic considerations for health systems in the future, because already there's around 50 million people with dementia in the world. It's probably a bit of an underestimation, and it's projected that by 2050, it'll be about 130 million people with Alzheimer's. About 60 to 80% of people with dementia have Alzheimer's disease. So it's a huge burden. It's a progressive neurodegenerative disease associated with a whole lot of different pathological factors such as beta amyloid plaques and tau protein, you know, neurofibrillary tangles. It's neuroinflammation. There's a lot of inflammatory processes happening in the brains of people with dementia and, well, Alzheimer's. So it's important that we try and prevent it, basically, more than wait till it happens, because any degenerative condition, from arthritis to dementia, it's really challenging to actually reverse it significantly once the horse has bolted.
That's very true. As we see, like in Alzheimer's or dementia, we know those tangles, those neuro sort of bundles with those tau tangles, isn't it, that they see a lot of, like, we need to know more so we can help with the prevention, don't we? We haven't quite figured it all out, like many things, of course, but we need to do more research here so we can actually approach it from a more preventative angle.
Yep.
There are some things that are becoming certain, isn't there, like our lifestyle, dietary, stress, of course, the old chronic stress spell. Depression, things that are contribute long-term to Alzheimer's. And then there's also that theory about diabetes and Alzheimer's being an advanced form of that as well. Yep. So there's a lot of interesting concepts going around.
Yeah, and we have really good science around some of that. You know, we know now from epidemiological studies that good diet, utilising your brain, being active, being, you know, physically active as well as mentally active, you know, doing the crossword or, you know, retaining part-time work or rather than sitting on the couch and being socially engaged and socially involved, all protective against the risk of dementia, as is eating a plant-based diet rather than a red meat-based diet, and as is eating fish. These are all protective factors, and so interventions that we can control. But, yeah, there's a lot of research that we still need to do. There's a lot that's gone on into plants in particular. A lot of them are acetylcholinesterase agents. They inhibit the breakdown of acetylcholine, which is part of the pathology. Not enough of acetylcholine or cholinergic activity in parts of the brain. but it's a huge leap from in vitro, you know, individual cell studies to actually working in clinical practice. So we still need a lot more research, absolutely.
And you're right, the acetylcholine, the synapses don't work properly, do they, if there's not enough of that going through? Like, that's a huge neurotransmitter, isn't it, to be firing for, we know, memory, for recall, for even just, I guess, cognition and clarity and focus is responsible. It's a bit like food for the brain, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It involves a whole lot of processes.
Substance.
Yep.
So what are the leading herbs here for favourable client outcomes, in your opinion? I know we've got a few to choose from, as always, which is amazing. It's good for us to be in that situation. In your opinion, for what are the leading herbs here that you've used, that you've had success with or find favourable for in-clinic results?
Yeah, I'll get onto that in a sec. But firstly, before discussing these, I think it's useful to just mention the fact that despite many, many years of huge amounts of research funding going into developing drugs for this purpose to prevent dementia or treat it or reverse it, not much has actually been successful. You know, there are three or four drugs that are clinically available here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, for people with early to mild stage dementia, and the main one being donepezil. There's others, galantamine and rivastigmine, and they're all cholinesterase inhibitors. That's kind of how they work. And there's another one called memantine, which seems to work largely through NMDA receptors, but all of them, the benefits are pretty mild. They don't seem to really prevent dementia or slow it down significantly. So before we launch into saying what herbs can do, I think we need to just have a bit of a reality check and not make extravagant claims, given the drug people have not been particularly successful with their smart drugs up until now. That said, you know, as we said earlier, there's a lot we can do preventatively, and there is stuff we can do for treatment as well. I guess one of the first ones, and some people may not agree with this, but and it's based again on epidemiological studies, but it's basically caffeine, tea and coffee. Camellia sinensis, not only green tea, but black tea as well, has increasingly been implicated as having a slight protective effect against the risk of dementia and Alzheimer's, as is caffeine. So not only that short-term acute stimulant effect, but the long-term protective effect. And then, of course, we have herbs such as ginkgo. That is still my favourite when it comes to, you know, protecting against dementia prevention. I think it's really good stuff if you have enough of it and if you take it long-term enough. We have bacopa, which, you know, has been trialled in a number of Alzheimer patient studies, and a recent review found it to be as effective as one of those cholinesterase inhibitors. Rosemary is the herb of remembrance, of course, and there's a lot of animal study data showing it can be helpful and it can reduce, you know, the plaque deposition, but not that much in the way of clinical studies with rosemary. One study, by the way, found that a lower dose of rosemary had more of a beneficial effect on cognition in young, healthy adults than a higher dose. So, you know, we need to learn more about it. And there's a whole plethora of other plants, you know, so-called diabetes type 3, where, you know, poor control of glucose long-term and neuroinflammation can be factors. Things like black seed can be really useful. Cinnamon, there's evidence that cinnamon is quite useful in certain animal models of cognition. And then we have our ginsengs, of course. We have American ginseng, Panax quinquefolium, and the Korean or Asian ginseng, Panax nota ginseng, Tianqi. They all contain ginsenosides, and they all have a pretty compelling amount of evidence, mainly from animal studies, but a growing number of clinical trials, that they can help with preventing a lot of age-related decline in bodily systems, including mental acuities. And last but not least, I guess we have our medicinal mushrooms that we've talked about in previous podcasts, Charlene, you know, lion's mane and ganoderma reishi being the two that I guess are more traditionally used for these sorts of purposes. Even 5,000 years ago, there were, you know, records in some of the early Chinese texts of reishi and lion's mane being used to help memory with aging. Yeah, there's a lot we can do.
That's a very positive note. As you said, the green teas and the black tea, that's interesting. I guess that high polyphenol content, the catechins, they must be contributing, I guess, against oxidative stress, which we know helps with cognitive decline, right? If we oxidate naturally all the time, but we don't want to accelerate that by any means.
No, absolutely. I mean, Polyphenolics are really diverse, but yeah, you know, there's a lot of goodies and tea, isn't there? Like L-theanine and theobromine and as well as the caffeine content. But
yes,
all three of them, tea, black tea, green tea and caffeine, are all associated with
epidemiology. That's an interesting point for us today, because a lot of people would certainly associate the green tea, but the caffeine and the black tea are probably a bit of news for our listeners today, for some of them maybe, so that's great.
It wouldn't suit everyone, would it, to have four cups of coffee a day?
No, that may not suit.
You know, it's not all bad either. You know, it's maybe a subject of a separate podcast, the benefits of coffee.
Yes, and individuality, of course, the nervous systems plainly couldn't cope with that, but there are some people that might be beneficial.
Absolutely, it is.
And quite tolerable.
It is in many scenarios, definitely.
Oh, thanks for that, Phil, sharing that information with us. It's really interesting, the leading herbs there. I guess a lot of us would have suspected the ginkgo, but there's a few surprises there. Cinnamon, very interesting. As you know, type 3 diabetes, that theory behind Alzheimer's development, and then also, I guess, glycation, right, those molecules on the end of the cells there where there's excessive sugar, right, like in diabetes, somehow they're contributing to, like, almost like plaques, aren't they?
Yeah, the different types of microglia and their role in, kind of immune surveillance within the brain and the different subtypes and the transformation between them can definitely be influenced by herbs like black seed and many others, I think.
Yeah, that's great. I think that opens up, more for us to use out there. If you weren't already thinking of those, there'll be some new ones there for everyone, I think, from today's podcast. Can you share a case study with us? What herbs and how they benefited, of course, within the client, if you have one that you're happy to share with us?
Sure. I guess, one that sprung to mind when I saw this question was a female who I started treating a couple of years ago. She was 63 at the time. Like a lot of people, had quite a demanding job and still does. At the time, she was caring for two elderly parents, one of whom had dementia and the other one diabetes, early stage diabetes. So obviously her life was quite stressful. She had a full-time job, as I say, and she was noticing that on a number of occasions she was just forgetting stuff, like, where she put her car keys, where her glasses were, and to the point where her job, it was really starting to impact on some of her performance at her job. Her job was quite demanding. It involved a lot of people contact, client contact, meetings, and she was just finding she was dropping balls, which was kind of not like her. She had always been cognitively pretty sharp. So my assessment of it, and with a parent with dementia and being that age, obviously she was quite worried, quite anxious about, am I getting dementia? So, the treatment in people like that, a bit of differential diagnosis, trying to ascertain, exactly what is going on. There are simple tests you can do to really see, is this potentially early stage dementia? The diagnosis isn't easy and quick, though. It's rather complex and generally staged. So I'm not suggesting that us as medical herbalists try and do it single-handedly. But in her case, to me, it was clear that, stress was a big factor. And so withania was one of the key components of the mix I made. And withania does improve cognition, not only where it's impeded as a result of stress, but also in animal studies where, normal, healthy rats able to do things a lot sharper and better when they've had a decent dose of withania. So I put withania in a mix. I gave her ginkgo. I gave her some Coptis chinensis, which, of course, is very rich in berberine. Contains more berberine generally than golden seal, which is increasingly difficult to source at the moment in an ethical and sustainable way. So Coptis also has benefits, of course, against diabetes. There's a lot of, evidence in clinical use based on traditional Chinese medicine, use of it being used in diabetes type 2. So I thought it would be a good one. And I put some Bicale skullcap in a mix too, because that's a good combination, Coptis and Bicale. And Bicale is also a really good anti-inflammatory for all sorts, I think, but including neuroinflammation. It does, the active scene across the blood-brain barrier, like our ordinary skull cap, the Bicalin and Bioseline, other actives do get into the brain, and I think it does a whole lot of good stuff. And possibly, as well as relaxing, it modulates the gut microbiome, which might be involved as well. It helps protect against diabetes, as I say. So, Coptis, Bicale, Withania, Ginkgo, and a teeny bit of black pepper, Piper nigrum, just 1%, because that also can help amnesia in mouse studies and animal studies. And of course, you know, it was used a bit for cognitive decline or to enhance cognition and mental performance, allegedly amongst Romans in the old days. And there is some animal study research in Alzheimer's too. So a pretty powerful mix with the black pepper in there. 1% is enough usually.
Formula.
But yeah, she continues to take a very similar mix a couple of years later. Now I think I've got more withania and a bit less coptis than I had. Diabetes hasn't, you know, worry about diabetes hasn't ensued, and she's got more help with her parents and things, so life's a bit easier for her. But prevention is the strategy, and she understands that, so she's on a long-term mix really, and hopefully it will help.
Well, it sounds like she's benefited from it, obviously, and if a client continues to stay on something, that's usually always a very good sign, isn't it, that they're finding a difference there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But wow, yeah. What an incredible story, Phil. Thanks for sharing. Some people and their lives are incredibly stressful, aren't they? And we never really actually know what someone's going through. But everyone struggles at some point. But obviously that's a huge, it's a huge burden for someone to work full-time and to be a caregiver full-time. It's an incredible load of stress right there to manage.
It is. And with cognition, you know, we often talk about dementia and Alzheimer's, and they get a lot of airtime, rightly so, because they're huge, you know. But there are many other potential causes of cognitive decline, particularly sudden cognitive decline. You know, it might be a brain tumour. You know, there's a lot to think about. Post-traumatic stress, you know, or simply just stress can really affect how your marbles work. And that's what she was most worried about.
Yeah, of course. And then there's that link to early genetic, you know, early onset Alzheimer's. There's a genetic link there, isn't there?
Definitely.
So you could understand her worry.
Absolutely. And by reassuring and talking calmly and a bit of lifestyle advice, but also reassuring, as well as the right herbs, of course, you can often make a really big difference, I think, in people who are worried about, you know, dementia, early dementia.
Thanks, Phil. That's a great story. I'm sure the listeners today appreciate you sharing that case study. And we're learning a lot as we go along today, I feel, which is brilliant. That's what we're here to do. Is ginkgo dose dependent? A very popular question that we get a lot, actually, just as a separate inquiry from practitioners. For successful results in cognition and dementia, today's topic. As we know, positive clinicals often state standardised dosages here. What do you find regarding dosages in your clinic? Because I know that you're very familiar with ginkgo, you've used it a lot. Could you tell us a little bit more there?
Yeah, I think most medicines have what I call a dose-response relationship. In other words, the higher the dose, the bigger the response, although that's not always the case. And some people, I think a minority of people would probably disagree with that. But that is a fundamental principle of pharmacology. And I think that applies to ginkgo definitely when it comes to protecting against dementia, because the biggest clinical trial on ginkgo that was funded by the American Institute of Health, and it was the primary objective was to see if it helped protect against dementia, and it involved more than 3,000 participants, which was huge. It involved a dose, though, that was too low, and so it wasn't surprising, I think, that the outcome wasn't positive for that primary objective. Some of the secondary outcome measures, there were favourable results, but the dose they used was 120 milligrams twice a day of the standardised ginkgo, the EGB761, which has got 99% of the airtime around ginkgo in the clinical trials on ginkgo.
It has.
And it's an extract made from ginkgo leaf. It's generally a 50-to-1, 50 kilos of herb leaf into every 1 kilo, standardised for 24% flavone glycosides and 6% terpenes. And the usual, all the doses that were used in the early trials were 120 milligrams of that, which is about 6 grams of leaf equivalent, but you know, quite mixed some of the results, and in recent years some researchers have been using double that dose, so 240 milligrams twice a day, and they, surprise surprise, have achieved somewhat better outcomes, including in the treatment of mild to moderate cognitive decline. So I quite like using a decent dose when it's kind of an existing cognition issue going on. But if it's preventative, I don't use a blunderbuss dose, but I do always only use, and have only ever used, apart from when vitamins out of stock occasionally, New Zealand grown ginkgo. Because New Zealand grown ginkgo, as we found 20 something years ago when we started working with a grower, one of the first commercial growers here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we we got Hort Research, as they were called then, one of the CRIs, to set up an assay to test New Zealand grown ginkgo, because these guys didn't have a clue how strong it was. And that revealed just how powerful New Zealand ginkgo is, how rich it is in those two key areas of actors. And so because of that, instead of doing, typically it's a two-in-one strength extract that companies produce to produce an extract that has 9.6 milligram per mil, at least favon glycosides, I think it is, we only need 1.5 kilos, not 2 kilos, in every 1 litre to produce something that's similar. So New Zealand ginkgo is stronger, therefore you don't need as big a dose, I guess is the long answer I'm trying to explain. I think we need more studies, we need more longer-term ones on ginkgo, but when it comes to cognition, I do advocate quite a decent dose, absolutely.
Thanks, Phil. That's, I guess, given them more information, or certainly given more information for everyone listening today with the dosages and ginkgo and how to use it. Lastly, could you take us through a few of your favourite formulas for cognition and dementia? I know you've mentioned some leading herbs here, but what do you typically use in this area? And just the herbs and your a classical dosage for you, some examples of what you find works there, what you'd like to prescribe.
Yeah, I mean, there's at least 20 or 30 herbs that I have on a table that I keep on my computer at home where I've found evidence of, you know, cognition-enhancing activities that I do sometimes refer to if I'm a bit stuck in the clinic. But I guess, you know, when it comes to dementia protection or early stage or you know, an elderly person in particular really concerned about dementia and wanting to avoid it or manage it, I guess the two key herbs that I use the most of would be bacopa and ginkgo. And bacopa you need to use a decent dose, a decent being at least 30 to 40 mils a week of a 1 and 2. Yes, it tastes disgusting. So, you know, one of the formulas I've got is bacopa 40, ginkgo 30, rosemary 20, all of them really bitter and really, ooh, strong tasting. 5% Panax quinquefolium, American ginseng, and just 5% of licorice just to take the edge off those others. But you can also use ginkgo with lion's mane. That's another really good combination with quite a broad spectrum of action, you know, against beta amyloid deposition, etc., as well as, you know, helping with relaxation and anti-aging, you know, suitable for people, you know, age, people wanting to avoid further decline. If it's a younger person or younger people, I quite like using sage if they can stomach the taste. Again, it's horrible. As a liquid, sage, rosemary and lemon balm, that's a good combo. And there is a clinical study finding it was useful in healthy young people. And sometimes Coptis and Bicol Skullcap and ginkgo together, as I think I said earlier. But there's just so many others. You know, if diabetes is a worry or an issue, you might want to consider nigella and cinnamon and again, lion's mane. They're good herbs in that scenario. And, of course, withania.
Good old withania can come in useful for many reasons, yeah. Can't it? But you're right, it is, yeah. It is a great herb to use for many things and often get those good results from its usage as well.
I forgot also to mention that, you know, the importance of addressing underlying cardiovascular weakness in people who are predisposed to dementia, because, you know, it is fundamentally a cardiovascular condition as well, you know, with the microvasculature. So ginkgo, again, can be really helpful there, as can hawthorn in a decent dose. So, you know, that could be a key component in people where there's obviously something cardiac going on as well.
Thanks, Phil. That's a lovely little end note for us to end on, that not everyone may know that the cardiovascular system's also involved, which often we find out about cardiovascular disorders, don't we? Like periodontitis or something like that, where there's the cardiovascular system involved well. And I think, you know, we're probably only really just starting to find out how much that does intertwine with a lot of conditions.
Totally agree.
Very interesting. But you're right. Hawthorn might not be a classical favourite for cognitive decline, but it could be well indicated, especially if the cardiovascular picture is present.
And ginkgo, you know, can work well post-stroke as well, because, you know, people who have had strokes are quite predisposed to cognition deficit, and they use it quite routinely in that way in China. And again, there's been a couple of really good clinical studies in the last few years showing if ginkgo is started within 7 days of a acute stroke, can sometimes work, it can work really well with slowing down that cognitive decline.
I guess that's when it's circulatorial. I'm sure it's not the only action, but it's amazing circulatory antioxidant effect can really help with that blood flow, right?
Yeah.
And that brain function benefits from that and recovering from a stroke.
Definitely.
Thanks, Phil. That's some great tidbits, and I'm sure everyone today listening has had a really interesting time listening to all the possibilities out there. And as always, it seems like we have a large selection that we can choose from, which is great because, as you've said, and as we all know, individuality plays a huge role, and it's good that we have quite a group of herbs to choose from depending on what the person may suit or present like.
Absolutely. That's part of the joy of modern herbal medicine, isn't it?
No, one size does not fit all in this
case. That's right. Thanks, Charlene.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for being part of today's discussion on cognition and dementia. And thank you to all our listeners again. And as always, we look forward to bringing you more phytotherapy talk in our next Herb Talk podcast. Ka kite anō from the Phytomed team. Thanks, Phil.
Ka kite.